I'm Tanzina Vega. Welcome back to The Takeaway. New York City is considering a law that would ban the sale of fur. Corey Johnson, who is the Speaker of the City Council, explained to WNYC's Brian Lehrer back in April why this ban was a priority for New York City lawmakers.
We've investigated how fur comes to be, the killing of animals through metal traps, through gassing, through fur farms, that it is cruel and inhumane. I think New York City should follow the lead of San Francisco and Los Angeles and other cities and other countries across Europe who've said this is not the way to go about it. And I want to try to have New York City to be a more humane city.
Concerns about animal rights and the ethics of selling fur have led New York on the same path as cities like San Francisco and Los Angeles, who have already put in place their own versions of a fur ban. But like so many issues in New York, this attempt to change a piece of the city's identity has drawn a backlash from a diverse group of opponents. Joining me now with more is Tanisha C. Ford, Associate Professor of Africana Studies and History at the University of Delaware. Tanisha, thanks for joining us.
Hello.
So let's talk a little bit about the role the fur industry has had in just like building the basic economy of New York City and also more broadly in the country.
Yes, New York City has been a major player in the fur trade since the 17th century. It was a thriving trade post where raw pelts were sold and used to fabricate goods in Europe and other luxury industries around the world. And in the 1950s, we see this expansion in the American market during the early years of the Cold War when the U.S. fur traders ban the sale of or the import of seven different types of pelts from Russia in order to expand the U.S. market. And so we see cities like New York, of course, but also Detroit, Chicago, and Los Angeles becoming major retailers for fur. But then states like Wisconsin, Utah, Idaho, Oregon, and Minnesota becoming major places that farm furs such as sable and mink, particularly.
How long has fur been politicized?
Well, it's long been political. Parts of this have to do with class issues. So back in the day, in the 50s and 60s, when fur was really at its peak in popularity in the United States, you know, one who was extremely wealthy would go to a place like Bergdorf's and sip champagne while models modeled the latest styles in fur. So there were definitely these real class dynamics related to fur that only really the 1% could afford to buy this luxury good. But then in the 1980s, we see a different kind of conversation really take center stage around the politics of fur. And that's around the time that PETA was founded. And animal rights activists really started to amplify their voices and say that actually the murder of animals to produce this very vanity-driven luxury good is quite inhumane. And they would show images of mink and other animals, including fox and raccoons, being electrocuted, skinned alive. I remember in the 1990s, in particular, when chinchilla furs were extremely popular, particularly among hip-hop artists and other entertainers, that they would post messages that really described how 150 chinchillas would have to be killed for a full-length coat. So there's this long tension around both the class politics, but also the treatment of animals that's really been amplified in recent decades as the sustainability movement and animal rights movement has taken another turn in the United States and abroad.
Tanisha, we've heard the fight about animal rights and animal treatment for very long. I'm wondering why fur is such a target when you think about other things like leather or meat.
Right. So I think that there's a way that both meat and leather are seen as more practical goods. That, of course, there's a very strong vegan movement in our country, but it's a way that we think of meat as being, you know, an option for people, or leather. It's not just about wearing the flashiest leather coat, but about wearing, you know, a practical good. You know, you need a leather wallet or a leather belt or leather sneakers. But fur has been seen as something that's completely frivolous by many. Of course, that there have been people who've pushed back against this notion of frivolity and have linked it to very important religious traditions. Particularly, I'm thinking of Hasidic Jews who wear fur hats as part of their religious observances. I'm thinking of Black ministers who have spoken out about the fact that wearing fur has long been a part of African-American fashion and style traditions. And so there's this way that fur is targeted because it's seen as this luxury item. But the reality is that particularly today, and I would say since the 1970s, when fur started to decline in cost and made it possible for more working class people to own fur, that really this idea of it as this extreme luxury good has changed as well. So it's kind of like a debate where many people feel like we're punishing working class people and people from historically marginalized groups for wanting to wear a good that for decades they couldn't even have gain access into this luxury market to buy.
We know that fur plays a big role in Black communities. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So there's this concept of styling out, which has been important to African Americans since enslavement, really, where their clothing choices were greatly restricted by plantation owners who determined what they would wear to labor in, which is usually cheap fabrics like denim and Osnaburg. So this idea of then being able to choose what to wear to church on Sunday, to wear for special occasions, became a great part of African-American self-expression. I'm thinking about a famous photo from the 1930s of two African-Americans wearing raccoon full-length furs. And it speaks to that idea of finally having the freedom to adorn ourselves the way that we choose. And that sense of styling out remains an important part of our cultural conversation around dress and identity. And that's why you could see someone like the hip-hop star and reality television star Safari Samuels is outside also with the protesters speaking out against his right to wear fur, saying things like our fur, our right. And another part of this debate for African-Americans is like, you know, of course we care about animals, but what about the ways that we are treated inhumanely in this country? And so that's another tension and another important part of this conversation around fur. It's about, you know, not just about fur itself, it's about our desire and our need and our right to protect ourselves and our own community. So who are the people who are speaking out for us, fighting for our rights, to protect our right to live against state violence in places like New York City?
Tanisha Ford is an associate professor of Africana Studies and History at the University of Delaware. Tanisha, thank you.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.